Fads come and go, and nowhere more than in the world of weight loss. That's why Noom's weight management programs are made to last. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today.
Before we get started with this episode of Bench with Bubba, I wanted to talk to you guys about the MLB Roto Baller Challenge, hosted by our friends at Fantrax on Fantrax.com. Fantrax is the most customizable free fantasy baseball platform in the industry, and that's why we're hosting over our 2022 Roto Baller Challenge over on Fantrax. If you want the greatest fantasy experience, sign up for a free Roto Baller Challenge team today by going to rotoballer.com/challenge. All leagues are free to join, and you get to compete against Roto Baller writers and readers for a shot at $500 cash grand prize. All new Fantrax users get entered into a free giveaway to win a signed official MLB Wander Franco jersey. If you want to get entered to win a Wander Franco jersey and you're new to Fantrax, go to Fantrax.com/Bubba and sign up for your free Fantrax account today. Once you have your Fantrax account, go to rotoballer.com/challenge to join the Challenge League, but go to Fantrax.com/Bubba to create your Fantrax account, be entered to win a Wander Franco autographed jersey. But for now, welcome to Benched with Bubba. And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Bloom, episode 4, as we keep cranking along through the beginning of this baseball and fantasy baseball season. We're going to talk some velocity changes that are for the good or the bad, potentially, because of recent news. Tons of listener questions, because you guys are awesome. But before we do that, a little housekeeping. I am on Twitter at BDentric, and my co-host, as always, on Twitter at RyanBHQ. Ryan Bloomfield, how we doing, man?
I'm doing fantastic tonight, Bubba. Setting my weekend lineups, chatting with you as we get ready to roll. It's a nice little routine. Got games on in the background. Nice little routine heading into the weekend here for the next 24, 25 weeks. So, Doing fantastic. How are you?
I'm good. Yeah, it's fun. It's the grind that is baseball season. There's always something to do every night. In addition to our other lives that we actually do live. Which is always fun. So it's like, guys,
I know we have some loyal listeners and tons of questions, like you said, Bubba. I don't know how much you all care about how bedtime was for our kids tonight, but that was also good. So I'm feeling like a good pod tonight.
Yeah, mine's back. She had like a week and a half to 2 week like up and down spell all of a sudden, but now she's back to just rock starring it. So we're good once again.
Enjoy it while it lasts.
Yeah, for those that listen to me and Toby, it was like 3 weeks ago or something. I literally had to put my mic on mute and go to put her to bed for like 10 more minutes. Toby was solo for 10 minutes. It was amazing timing, but we're good now. We're good for now, and we're going to talk about some recent news before we get into the velo changes. And like I said, as usually we do listener questions at the end. I'm going to do my best to intertwine them throughout because you guys have a lot of questions that coincide with. It was really ironic. Ryan and I kind of were texting, and then I put the tweet out, and like – seconds afterwards, you guys were like basically asking questions about what we were going to talk about anyway. So this is perfect. This is like symmetry at its finest. But let's talk some news first. Teoscar Hernandez oblique injury didn't look good. Like he looked like he already had like an ankle or a wrist a couple days ago. Then he gets this oblique injury, and he had the same injury a couple years ago. Obliques are never good. So Zimmer's been playing in the outfield, kind of in his role. It kind of opens up Tapia again. Are you interested in any of these guys in fantasy, or what's your plan with this Toronto outfield?
Not really interested. I think we talked about Zimmer maybe a week or two ago. Until I see anything in the bigs from him, I I'm staying away. I think it's going to be somewhat of a platoon. I think Kevin Biggio might get some outfield at bats there as well, with Zimmer and Tapia hitting from the left side. If you're desperate for steals, I'd lean Tapia over Zimmer. I think he'd get a little bit more playing time, but we'll see. It sounds like it's a 2-week thing for Teoscar. Just a really crappy injury, and the Blue Jays' second oblique injury of the week. I was reminded, you know, I was saying last week how you get reminded of all these little things. I was reminded of how badly the Monday IL stint sucks. I've got Dansby Swanson on a lot of teams, and Swanson had that IL announcement on Monday, so I'm stuck with a zero there in a bunch of leagues. But yeah, going back to Teoscar, it sounds like he's going to be out a couple weeks. So it sounds like it could have been worse, unless Teoscar and the team is being overly optimistic. But if it is really 2 weeks, I think you're just looking at maybe a rental if you're desperate for steals with Tapia. And I would not touch Bradley Zimmer until we see anything from him in the majors.
It's a good thing Justin Mason's not in the chat right now. He'd be very, very angry with the Zimmer disdain around here. But I'm with you. Like, I'm not – Tapia's a guy I've actually rostered in recent years. Yeah. Like, I know with regular playing time, he can at least be quasi-productive in, like, a 15-team league. Zimmer, we just haven't seen it consistently. Maybe this will get him going. Who knows? But regardless, don't break the bank for any of them. Because, like you said, hopefully Teoscar's back in a few weeks and it won't matter anymore. Yep. And we'll go our way there. And maybe this is what Biggio needs. We'll see. I'm not holding my breath for that either. Detroit Tigers now. Robbie Grossman down with an injury yet again. It's got Victor Reyes playing the outfield. He led off on Wednesday, hit ninth on Thursday. Badu moved up to like sixth, which is kind of promising. Meadows is crushing it right now, so he's making me look like a fool. But are you interested in a Reyes, or are you just kind of hanging out on this one and watching? And what's your thoughts? Well, we'll talk Badu later, but what's your thoughts on the situation?
Yeah, my big thing was Badu. I was hoping to see, like, Badu. He kind of got pushed out of the, not leadoff role, but the top of the order with Grossman and Meadows. Got really busy with Meadows being traded to Detroit between draft season and opening day, pretty much. So I was hoping to see Akil Badu go back up to leadoff, especially tonight. There, Detroit was facing leave right-hander, and Badu was cranky. Like, yep, and Badu was like six. So I was hoping for leadoff there, and instead it was Reyes. So Victor Reyes, like, there, he, I mean, if you go back to 2020, I know it was a short season, but Victor Reyes did hit .277, four homers and eight steals and 200 at bats. Like, that's a pulse in 15 teamers and definitely an AL only league. So it sounds like he's going to be the fill in while Grossman's out. We'll see how long that actually happens, but similar to what we just talked about with Tapia, and I'd probably take Reyes over Tapia, just because I think you'll get more consistent playing time, at least in the interim, if you're looking for a rental. And Reyes can run. He's had a stolen base success percentage over 80% each of the last two seasons, which is great. So Victor Reyes, again, desperate for speed, I'd rank him over Tapia if you're just looking for a rental for this weekend, because I think he'll play regularly, and it sounds like near the top of the order going forward.
Yeah, Reyes, you mentioned the 2020. That was pretty promising. And just like the finish of 2021, I'll just pick August 1st as basically the last 2 months of the season. He hit .333 in 111 plate appearances with, you know, three home runs, 12 extra base hits, stole a couple bags. His ISO you wouldn't think much of him at 200 ISO. Like, he was hit a little bit of thump with him. He had 11.4% barrel and a 41% hard hit rate the final 2 months of the season. Like, he wasn't a slouch out there like most people think. So I'm with you on Victor Reyes. He's quite intriguing in that mix. Obviously, deeper leagues, again, I don't think you're running out in a 12-teamer to go get him. But it's going to be interesting. I want to see – looking forward to seeing, like, Friday and Saturday, how the lineups look. Like I said, Thursday, you had Reyes leading off. You had Badu ninth on Thursday. And then Wednesday on Thursday, you have Reyes ninth, Badu sixth. It's like, okay, what do we get this weekend? Like, let's get something consistent here where we can kind of get a feel on how productive Reyes can be. And Badu's available in some leagues, so people kind of already jumped the ship on him. So we'll have to see how that plays out. But I haven't heard a final, like, say on how long Grossman's out yet. That's still kind of – I think he's still – I don't even know, like, is he even on the IL, or is he just day-to-day?
He's not. It sounds like he's questionable for this weekend, so it's going to be a kind of a game-time call.
A lingering, annoying thing. It'll be a Monday IL stint. That's what will happen. It'll be like, Monday afternoon, like 4:07 Pacific time, he'll go on the IL. I can see it now.
as someone who has Grossman in a couple different leagues, I can see my 2 Monday streak continuing on. It is. I mean, honestly, for Grossman, it is like groin injuries, groin tightness. Like, that's not good for someone who, I mean, Grossman's not like super old, but he's 32, and a lot of his fantasy value hinges on, you know, making a run at 20 stolen bases like he had last year. And so groin injuries can be notorious. I mean, we're just talking about obliques. Those are probably like the worst, but especially for a base dealer, a groin injury like that, I am pretty concerned, even if he does come back. Yep. You know, the latest headline on RotoWire is he hopes to return Friday. I hope he doesn't rush and not run and that sort of thing. That would be actually even worse. I'd rather have him just go on the IL, put someone in next week and get back at it the following week.
Yeah, as a man where he is one of my two most rostered players in the NFBC right now, I'm 100% with you. Like, go put the IL stint out. We're only in April. Like, go spend 15 days. I don't care. 20 days. Get healthy so you can run for 5 months. That's all I care about. Yep. So we'll have to wait and see how that plays out. Blake Snell, back to the IL with the same injury that got him last year. He was going to try to pitch this week. Obviously, that didn't work. So he's back to the IL. That does mean Mackenzie Gore is getting the call. He was awesome in his AAA appearance. He's awesome in spring training. But now he's going to pitch Friday night, so we'll get to see what he can do against the Atlanta Braves. And then he'll be available on Fab this week in NFBC. It'll be fun. He's going to probably have to pitch well to get a lot of money. But I think people will be aggressive on Mackenzie Gore. So what's your thoughts on this whole situation?
Yeah, I mean, we talked about Gore, and we'll talk about velocity later on in the pod. But Gore in the spring it was Mitch Keller. Mitch Keller was the top. Gore was right up there in terms of fastball velocity gainers in the spring compared to 2021. So that was a really good sign. And then on top of that, the strikeout to walk percentage, which is one of the few things I like to look at in spring, was off the charts as well. I believe it was 16 strikeouts to one walk, something really good like that. And then in his first start, in Gore's first start at AAA, El Paso, went 5 innings, I believe struck out 7 in that start. So like every single thing that we see, every recent data point we've had from Mackenzie Gore has been really good. A lot of the scouting tidbits that I've heard have been equally as impressive as the numbers have been. So it's going to be wild if Mackenzie Gore goes out Friday and pitches well. Like, his FAB price is going to be through the roof, especially because I'm sure drafted in most leagues and then dropped when he was sent down to AAA. So it's going to be one of those where, like, I almost hope he struggles a little bit on Friday to keep the price down. Because I'm really believing what we're seeing from Mackenzie Gore early on. So
I'm just wondering what they do though, because, you know, you got Darvish, Manaea, Musgrove, Nick Martinez looked phenomenal his first start. So when Snell comes back to the IL, do they go 6-man rotation? Do they move someone else around? Like, or does Gore go back down? That's the conundrum. So I don't think they want to put him in the bullpen. I think they want to keep him stretched out.
You don't want to mess with him. And I don't know. I tend to, especially with 6 starters, this stuff usually works out. Like, there's 5 chances for starting pitchers ahead of him to either get hurt, or if Gore just comes out and shoves, like, you kind of have to keep him in the rotation. So it's something to consider, especially if Snell's stint. I don't think we know exactly how long he's going to be out for, but if it's a short stint, something to consider. But I think if Gore goes out there and does his thing, he's got to stay.
Yeah, I'm with you. He's got to force the hand, basically. So we'll see how that one goes. Minnesota Twins, this one really stinks because I was hoping for good things, but I was still kind of pessimistic at times because Alex Kirilloff, you know, he had the wrist injuries, had surgery last year. It's been a thing that's bugged him for a couple years off and on, and it's still bugging him this year. He's back to the IL with it, and he did not look good to start the season. I know, small sample, but just didn't look right up there. Trevor Larnach looks like he's going to get the call up to potentially play there. Nick Gordon went into the game when Kirilloff left early the other day. So those look like the two potential replacements for Kirilloff, and I don't know how long this will be because he seems like it's messing him up pretty good. So we'll have to kind of wait and see. So any interest in Larnach or Gordon right now?
Not really. I mean, first off, it just really sucks for Kirilloff because, I mean, Kirilloff was one of them. You can go back 2 years, I think it was, when he broke out, maybe 3 years now at this point, but Kirilloff was like widely considered a top 10 prospect for fantasy, had everything that we were looking for. And then this wrist thing just will not go away. It's the same wrist that he had season-ending surgery on last season, and obviously something ain't right. And so, like, you just have to wonder long-term for Kirilov, definitely for this year. It's like, is one IL stint going to fix things? I kind of highly doubt it. So hope he takes the time off, gets what he needs and can come back. But that's a long time to be dealing with the wrist and important development years. In terms of, replacement, like Larnach, Gordon. Larnach hasn't been that great either. He started 2-for-19 in AAA and just got called up. So he lesser of a prospect. I don't see it. At HQ, we're projecting 150 at-bats, hitting 240 with three homers. Really, unless you're super deep, I'm not really going after Larnach at all. So I'd probably just stay away from the situation. And unless we totally see some kind of power outburst in this next week or so, might be too late at that point. But I don't think you really take a stab at Larnach. I just haven't seen enough in the majors from him.
Yeah, I'd probably rather take a chance actually on Gordon if you need to, if he's going to play enough. At least he'll bring you some speed.
Right, yep.
But we'll have to kind of wait. And again, the blessing and the curse of an injury is at least we get a few days to see what they do this weekend before Sunday comes along, try to get an idea of what these goofy coaches are up to. But in the end, it might just be a wait-and-see approach for next week and see what happens there. Try to get him cheap this week. Who knows? But out of like all the outfielders we talked about, it seems like Victor Reyes is the one guy we actually are kind of interested in. The rest of them are just kind of stopgaps for the mention. And Victor Reyes might not even get a chance if Robbie Grossman comes back this weekend.
Assuming so, Grossman is actually out this weekend. Yeah, we'll see.
Even matter.
Gordon's interesting. I mean, Gordon did make he made a really good play that kind of bailed out Chris Paddock in what could have been a terrible start against LA earlier this week. Gordon made a diving catch in left field. So maybe the glove keeps Gordon ahead of Larnach. But I don't know. We're projecting 8 steals for Nick Gordon, which helps in 160 at-bats. So again, if you kind of sound like a broken record, but if you need speed, maybe Gordon. But yeah, still go like Tapia and Reyes over him.
The last bit of news we have for now, thank goodness, is Jonathan India, right before we hit record, basically left the Reds game with an apparent hamstring injury. So keep track of that. We know hamstrings can be a couple weeks, he might be fine like Saturday. We don't know all the details, but I'm assuming he might miss most of the weekend, if not at least one game. I'm guessing the weekend. And that leaves some question marks. Brandon Drury, you mentioned another wonderful name I'll let you talk about, a former Giants legend. So what are you thinking about this red second base position potentially?
I mean, the first thing that I do when I see someone go down is I go to HQ's depth charts and see we've got projected for second base, plan B at bats. And there he is, Donovan Solano, Giants legend.
Sneaky good, man. He was sneaky good.
Sitting there. I believe he's down in the minor, so he'd have to get called up in order to play. We'll see. Depends what India's injury is.
A little more enthusiasm would be good there.
I don't know. I'm a little more. Brandon Drury's another like name from the past. I mean, I was a big Diamondbacks fan when I was living down in Arizona, and Brandon Drury was like the guy. He's gone 3-for-9 with a homer. I don't know. Nothing really interesting either way. Sorry to hate on your boy Solano.
No, I'm just joking.
I'm staying away from it.
He was really good versus lefties, questionable versus everybody else. Let's put it that way. But all right, let's get to the meat and potatoes of this episode. We have a couple things, but the main one that a lot of people are curious about, and I think it's talked about a lot right now. So I think it's a great topic to break down. And obviously the balloon boards are money. Ryan tweeted this out about 3-4 hours before the show. So you guys can look at it on the old Twitter there at RyanBHQ, but it's velocity gainers, velocity, I guess, faders so far this season through one or two starts, obviously early sample. Before we get into the names, and I'm going to go over to the listener questions, and then whatever we don't hit there, we'll hit ourselves type situation. What are you looking for right now? Obviously, you know, increased is good, decreased is kind of concerning to dig in more, but like one start's one start. When does it really set in to be a problem to you?
Yeah, and this is the trouble with we're so itching to analyze every single thing. We're all excited. It's week one. We want to overreact to everything. I do think velocity, anything at like a per pitch level is something that we can at least look at, but you need to look at this stuff with context, especially early in the season. Like a lot of these games, I think I've mentioned this before, but a lot of these games, I mean, the weather, especially like in the Midwest, has just been terrible. this first week. And so a lot of these games we talked about, with Shane Bieber last week, like his opening day start was just horrible weather. And his velocity was down. The second time we'll probably get to him. But you want to look at these numbers because a drop in velocity, I'm even more interested in than a rise. And I'll get to that in a second, but a drop in velocity can just, the possibility for injury with a drop in velocity, oftentimes that's one of the first leading indicators for something deeper that's wrong. So the guys who have lost velocity, especially when you look at the context of, did he pitch in 30 degree weather or was it out in LA, that kind of thing. If it passes that kind of context test, there are some guys on this list that I tweeted out that I'm really concerned about. The fastball velocity risers is important. I do wonder in some of these guys, we'll talk. The one thing I wonder about is how long they can keep that up, especially early in the season, especially this season, early in the season with the short spring ramp up time. These guys are only going maybe four or five innings, and you know, maybe the adrenaline's going. They're going all out in that short stint, and their velocity's up. How long can they actually hold that into the season? I don't know. Some of these games might be legit. It might be a Lucas Giolito from a few years ago. So you definitely, something to kind of wrap this all up, it's definitely something you want to look at. It's something you want to take a deeper dive. It should be that start of a deeper dive, though. Start with this list of velocity gainers and faders and start to look at, you know, what types of games did they pitch in? Did they show this kind of velocity in spring training, maybe in the second half of last season? Did they go to Driveline in the offseason? Just things like that that you can kind of take a further dive and then really highlight these guys. Because if you do find the right ones to either fade or push, this is the time of year where you get that full credit for mining that talent and getting a full season out of them. So going to be important to pick the right guys here.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there, because like if I see my pitcher got shelled, like the first thing I do is go and look at their Statcast page and go, okay, what was wrong? Mm-hmm. Like at least velocity wise, that stands out real easily. Like you see the arrow up, the arrow down, done. Yep. Don't have the whole lot to worry about there. And then they'll show you the hard hit rates, show you all the good stuff if you want to go deeper. The velocity was the same. You're just kind of like, well, maybe he's tipping pitches. Maybe he's had a bad day. I don't know, but you're not as concerned type thing. Like I haven't looked yet, but Shohei gave up 6 runs today in 3 2/3. I'm curious, I'll be honest, like what just happened there to Texas, but. We'll have to kind of see how that all plays out. But that was kind of Mike Kirlin had that question, and you just answered it there, like with velocity talk and having a short spring training, cold weather, etc. Do you have some concerns? Like when would you start to really believe in the increase in the dip? And then you kind of already hit on that right there. So Kirlin, your question has been answered.
Kirlin first, always, yes, right?
Kirlin hit the number right there. I'm just kind of scrolling through trying to figure it out here. But let's start with Caleb. I'm gonna say Benoit. Do we disregard Kopech because he was operating as a relief pitcher last year? Because on the Fallers, he was 97.3 last year, 95.3. I think that's a great point, because there's Jorge Lopez on the other side of the spectrum as one of the biggest gainers. And we've talked about that time and time again. When a pitcher can go out and throw one inning, he can just ramp up and let it go. When he's got to throw 500-600 pitches, whatever, you got to kind of pace yourself unless you're Justin Verlander. So I think I'm good with that, but how do you look at Kopech?
Yeah, it's a great question by Caleb, who is, we'll say, like the Twitter coffee man. If you follow him on Twitter at Caleb Benoit, he's the founder of Connect Roasters and does some stuff with Ian Happ, which is really cool. So Caleb's good.
Now I have to follow him.
Now you do.
I'm a coffee fan. So here we go.
I just call him the coffee guy, because that's his header on his Twitter is coffee beans, and it's fun stuff. So to get to his question, that is one of, so when I was saying these boards are the start and not the end of a deeper dive, that's exactly what I'm talking about too, is the relief versus starter. And Bubba, like you said, it works both ways. You kind of expect a pitcher when they go to the bullpen to maybe drop a pitch, focus on going all out with their fastball and maybe throw one secondary. Whereas when they go from where Kopech was last year to a starting role, they're focusing a little bit more on getting at least two times through the order, maybe working on a third pitch to be able to get that far, and then just saving themselves for that second time through the order, maybe even third with the lower velocity. So Michael Kopech going down from 97.3 last year to 95.3. It's enough for that he bubbles up on this board, but it's not something I'm concerned about at all. If Kopech can throw 95.3 with the fastball and have the secondaries that he has, he's going to be just fine. So that is one on the dropper list that really I'm not concerned about at all. Honestly, it's probably a good thing because maybe that means he'll pitch deeper into the season than originally thought.
Yeah, 100% agree with that. Ms. D here, Ms. Danielle Salinger, she's married to one Justin Mason, or he's lucky to be married to her, let's put it that way.
Yes.
Let me rephrase that real quick. She's got four names for us. So we'll talk about the two risers first, two just absolutely amazing Cy Young candidate pitchers. Carlos Rodon, who we saw, he's filthy. And when you guys listen to this, he's going to pitch on Friday. Maybe it'll be after his start. Hopefully this stays the same. Rodon up to 97.4 after 95.4 last year, and he was great last year, so he got that bump. And then you got Alex Cobb, went from 92.7 to 94.5. He's hit 95, which he's like never done in his career pretty much. And I watched a lot of that game, and he made it look easy, actually. Like, it was kind of effortless, it felt like. So obviously some things mechanic wise and just what he was doing changed, and he did it all spring. He pulled it off in that game. So Cobb and Rodon, what's your thoughts on them? Because Rodon, I'm always still back in my mind, like, I'm scared for that one throw where just like, ah, oh, I got to go out. Like, that scares me every time. Cobb, I'm feeling pretty good about. Maybe I shouldn't, but I like it a lot.
Yeah, it's Alex Cobb has started a bunch of games in his career, and I believe his highest fastball velocity in any of those starts was like mid 90, maybe 93 and some change. And then he goes out there and we see Alex Cobb throw 94.5 in his first start. So like, that's something where, and Cobb is one of those guys, he's been around. I know there's injury risk with him and with Rodon. And I think Danielle just baited us into wanting to talk about how good the Giants are. And if we get to Urias, how bad the Dodgers might be, but I'll take the bait because those were two impressive outings for Rodon and Cobb. Cobb specifically, like, that type of increase with the splitter that he has is something that's really sexy. San Francisco knows what they are doing, man. Yeah. With their starting pitchers so far this season, 27% strikeout minus walk rate. That's second best in the majors behind the Mets, which is basically just Siler McGill.
The Thai God.
Exactly. That is leading that charge. But 27% strikeout minus walk for the Giants starters as a whole, 154 WHIP, 220 xFIP. That's
pretty good.
That's crazy. So, it kind of makes sense to buy into that appeal to authority and get those Giants guys because they something's in the water. They know what they're doing.
Cobb, his start reminded me a lot of when Gossman first came over, where I was kind of like skeptical, big splitter guy, you know, all this stuff. And there's a lot of similarities there, and I'm hoping the results for the whole season stay the same. We will wait and see. But she had two fallers as well, faders. Julio Urias, who was in Colorado, a little chilly, we'll see. He was 94.1 last year, down to 91.4. That's a pretty good drop off. And then you had Presley, who all off season, you know, his velocity was down. People were like, oh, no, that's just what Presley does. We remember the year before he was in the backfields the whole time. We never thought anything of it, but he was sitting 95.4 last season, 92.7. I believe he didn't even get to save his last outing. He got pulled ahead of that, so maybe there's a slight concern there with Presley. We'll wait and see. Like, they gave him that extension, so I'm like, you think he's okay, but you never know. I will say Urias, I was terrified all season just because the increased workload last year, like that was a massive jump from previous seasons. Could he be okay? Sure. Could it be cold weather? Sure. Could it be a slow ramp up? Sure. But I was seriously concerned about that gigantic, a guy with bad injury history in the past, getting that kind of workload increase concerned me a bit. So what's your thoughts on Presley and Urias?
Well, and that's the thing with Urias, like, and the injury was a shoulder. I mean, it was shoulder surgery, like that pretty wasn't drastic.
Wasn't it the thoracic thing, or was it something different?
I think it was something different. Okay. It was just as serious though. It was pretty legit surgery. Like, Urias did not throw more than 80 innings in the majors at all in any season until last year with 186. I don't think that was being talked about enough from just an injury risk standpoint. where he was being drafted in pretty much a second round of main events by the time draft season was done. So yeah, like the drop in fastball velocity for Urias from 94.1 to 91.4 is huge. He only had, let's see, in his first start, he only had 4 swinging strikes on 57 pitches. He's not a big strikeout guy anyway. And I had Urias's box in the forecaster, and that concerned me. Like the second half last season, Urias really wasn't as good as he was in the first half, and kind of got lucky. And that's why the surface stats were there. So really concerned for Julio Urias. I mean, if you drafted him, you're holding him. Of course, you're waiting this out. Maybe it was just kind of a cold weather thing in Colorado, and he'll turn around and be throwing 93 next start. Like that's your best case scenario. That's what you're hoping for. But really concerned with Julio Urias. You don't want to read too much into one start, but that's about as bad as it could get in one start. And then Presley, like, yeah, the extension's a really good point, Bubba, because like I do, again, appeal to authority, but like Houston gave Verlander a huge extension, showing them that they're confident in his, I guess it wasn't an extension, but it was just a 2-year deal, confident in his rehab. And then they did the same thing with Presley. Like I thought, you know, did not think too much of the velocity drop in the spring, especially with what we saw last year, just kind of like a cranky type of spring training. But then, yeah, it's a little bit late to still be ramping up. And it did cost Presley on Wednesday. He took the loss in a blown save. So Presley has plenty of leash, but not if he keeps doing what he did this week. So it's something to keep an eye on. I'm definitely keeping tabs on Hector Neris, who I think is around 50% owned in main event leagues. And then obviously lower ownership in 12. So
yeah, and I saw him actually dropped in some leagues this past week. So yeah, that's a fun spec, maybe for a question later in the podcast, potentially someone to look at. But I had to look it up because I was really curious. So the Urias injury was a shoulder, but it was anterior capsule surgery, that the same injury that ended Johan Santana's career. Only Chris Young ever came back from it. And let's be honest, not the most dominating return. So.
Let's be honest. Did Chris Young really come back?
Exactly. Did he really come back? So, yeah, it was a pretty severe thing, and I think he's young, so rooting for the best. But I think he does face the Reds this weekend, so we'll have to wait and see how Urias does. Matt Mison asks Tucker Davidson, please. Tucker was 93 last year, 94.9 in his first start. I will say he's already back in AAA. Just keep that in mind. He's not even up. With Tucker, it felt like one of those, like, okay, kid, give us 3 to 4 innings if you can. Like, just give us 3 or 4 and we'll move on. Could be wrong, but he's felt like more of a long man / bullpen guy, so he might have been let loose. I don't know. I didn't watch a ton of it, though, but I know that's kind of how the game plan was for him. What was your thoughts on Tucker Davidson?
Yeah, it kind of flew under my radar just because at HQ, we didn't really – Chris Blessing's our Atlanta – expert for prospects, and he had Tucker Davidson. HQ folks will know what this means, but a 7C prospect rating, which is very mediocre for Tucker Davidson from a fantasy standpoint. The current role that we had set up for him was like a swing man and a potential role down the road. Blessing sees Tucker Davidson as a setup man long term, so you don't really want to see that, even in even with the increased velocity. I mean, Davidson did do pretty well this spring. He had 8 strikeouts, no walks, and 5 innings. But I don't think you're really that interested in him. Maybe he'll stick as like a number 4, number 5 starter. But like you said, he's already back down in the minors. So one of those guys where like, yeah, it's nice to see, but there's not enough, at least from our prospect reports, there's not enough in the arsenal and the repertoire that he could stick in the rotation and be effective this year. So sorry to Matt and Tucker Davidson and maybe Tucker's family. Kind of harsh, but
if you're listening to the show, Tucker's family or Tucker Davidson, if you listen to the show, you're more than welcome to come rebuttal live. Knock yourselves out. We'll have you here. Edward J. Gillis, really good fantasy NFBC player, has a couple here for us. And on the green board, the risers, the biggest surprise was Jorge Lopez throwing 98 after 95.3 last year, and he has a chance to close in Baltimore. Do you think, like, pretty much are you in agreement he's throwing hard because he is closing in Baltimore?
Yeah, he's throwing hard because he's closing in Baltimore, but he's also, I'm not sure if Lopez knows where it's going. He's got 4 walks to just 2 strikeouts. So if you're going to increase your velocity but then have control problems, that's not great as a reliever, especially on the Orioles where you're not going to get many chances. So if Jorge Lopez is still around, like, and fab bidding gets aggressive on him because folks are so desperate for saves, this is not somebody who I'm targeting. I just don't see enough skill to be able to even, you know, hold the job, but then also he's got some potential to really kind of wreck your ratios if it doesn't work out. And the other thing, again, super small samples, but this is where we're at, only five swinging strikes this season on, looks like, maybe 70 or 80 pitches. So that's not that great either with the increased velocity. So increased velocity is not everything. You still need to have some other skills to accompany it, which is when I get excited, and I'm not seeing that with Jorge here.
I think I know your answer to this, but I'm just going to ask it because you said a guy that can ruin your ratios as he closes. Another guy that has the effect on ratios from time to time, would you rather Jorge Lopez or Daniel Bard?
I'll go Daniel Bard. Daniel Bard has at least shown that he can be successful in Coors. I'm holding my nose at both of them, but I also think Colorado could get some more chances. So yeah, I'd go Bard. I just think he's a little bit better. I mean, we have that 2020 sample. He was 3.65 ERA with six saves in 25 innings. Like, I know I'm grasping at straws here, but that was a really good comeback story. The swing strikes are there. Mm-hmm. Like, there's just a lot more with Daniel Bard than there is Jorge Lopez if you're in that closer bargain bin.
Definitely agree with you on that one. His other question on the red, he said on the red chart, he mentioned Julio Urias, who we mm-hmm. talked about already, but he also mentioned that Cy Young Ray is down a little himself. Robbie Ray, 94.8 last year. That was a big thing for him, the velo increase, down to 91.9. And this last start against the White Sox, they pummeled him with that down velocity. And he's one of those guys we talk about with many of these guys. It's like, okay, if they sit 92, he's in trouble. Like, even 93.5, 94, we're good. It's just that little bit of difference makes all the difference. And that almost 3 to 3 mile an hour drop, it got him crushed by the White Sox. How concerned are you with Robbie Ray?
I want to see one more start. I want to see one more start before I'm like really concerned, because the first two Robbie Ray starts were at Minnesota, at Chicago. And I know, the Chicago start was, I'm not sure why they were even playing that game. That was that was some brutal weather. So Robbie Ray has had like really bad luck climate wise in his first two starts, like extreme weather. In the first start, he had 14 whiffs on 96 pitches. Like, you know, that's good. I want to see one more data point at home in Seattle and see what Ray tops out as. The thing that, I mean, that more so, more than the velocity going down, the thing that I'm concerned about is like the walks are back.
Bingo.
4 walks in his first start, 2 walks in his second start. Like, Robbie Ray, we forget, but Robbie Ray had the worst walk rate of any starting pitcher in baseball in 2020. And then he wins a Cy Young. He owns that 2020 skill, not maybe as much as the Cy Young season, just because it was 2020 60 game season. But if that wildness starts to creep back into the profile, I'm going to be really concerned over Robbie Ray going forward, even if the velocity comes back in his next couple starts.
That's a great point. And Michael Simeone, the SP streamer, he tweeted out a fun one today. K to walk percentage leaders with pitchers who have started 2 games so far. And you like Tyler McGill, Shane McClanahan. Then he put 2 notable guys, Yu Darvish -2.7% and Robbie Ray -5.4%. So that's what you're saying. Those walks just through the roof with Mr. Ray. And that's a big, big conundrum to deal with right there. Conceptual Alex at ATINBC asks, should we be worried about Wheeler? Only first start back after shortened spring, but shoulder issues and lower velo. 97.2 last year, 95 in his first start. Similar to Ray, I need to see one more, because I am concerned, like, the shoulder issues are already going to kind of decrease things. That's kind of how it works. But the fact he got the late ramp up, you know, he only threw X amount of pitches. I want to see like one more at least from Wheeler before I get really concerned. But let's just say I'm not overly happy with it either.
Yeah, I think you hold. I mean, well, you have to hold, but I'd like to see a couple more starts, and not even more. I mean, not just one. I'd like to see a couple, just because Wheeler was so delayed ramping up. If the velocity does stick around 95, like that's not good. That's where Wheeler was back in like 2017, 2018, when he was coming back from Tommy John surgery and was not that great of a pitcher. Wheeler became elite once the fastball got up to 97. So I with Wheeler, there is a definite difference between like 94, 95 and 97. And there are some pitchers who can get by, and maybe like, and I'm kind of going all over the place, but like maybe Shane Bieber can get by with 90 mile an hour fastballs because his slider is so good, his curve, those types of things. He can get by with other pitches. Wheeler's very reliant on that fastball velocity. I truly feel that's what really vaulted him to his draft price. So it's going to be really important. I'm not ready to hit the panic button just because I still think he's ramping up. I think if this goes into May and it's still at 95, I'll be concerned, but not that panicked at this point. Let's give him some. Let's give him some more starts to get going.
Yeah, I'm with you. Like, yeah, I want to see a little more with him. Like, let's get him the proper spring training before we really lose it with Wheeler. Because even his bullpen when it was still spring looked pretty good. So I think he's just – I'm being optimistic here that he's still kind of getting it going. So we'll wait and see on that one. Bojang Bugami has a great question. First off, great board, as usual. Do we have a sense of how often these week one velo changes in both directions hold as we get deeper into the season?
Yeah, this was really good. And I responded and I was like, yeah, I'll try and run some numbers if I can do it before showtime. And of course, life happens, got in the way. But it's a really good point. I'd like to. So one thing I was able to run, and this was interesting. I did look at least for last year, the average fastball velocity by week through the season. This includes everybody. So this is all starters, all relievers, you know, whatever. First week of the season, average fastball velocity was 93.6. It never got above 93.9. The last week, I'm lying. The last week of the season, the MLB average fastball velocity crept up to 94. I was pretty shocked at how stable the velocity was throughout the season. So that doesn't really get into like his question about specific guys and guys who had major rises and major fades, how that, you know, kind of played out during the season. It's a really good question that I think I should look into more as I have more time. But it was interesting to kind of see the velocity by week stay pretty consistent throughout the season. So there wasn't much of a ramp up during the warmer months, which kind of surprised me.
That is a bit surprising because we've kind of always, well, not always, we've thought, especially with certain pitchers, like you mentioned, we've talked about even with like Bieber and Ray, like bad conditions, you're expecting velo to be down. You figured it would get better as the season goes on, but I guess not for everybody. So that's interesting to check out. Before we get to some more pitchers here, I just want to let everybody know, Brandon Drury just went deep to tie the game up at 3. That's his second home run of the season. So that might make things even more fun this week. And just want to throw that one out there.
Solano stays.
Staying Solano in AAA, stays kid.
In AAA.
Wherever they're at. Was it Louisville or Indianapolis or something with those guys? So have some fun, kids. Let's talk about some more names here because the other listener questions we have is for like our panic mode section of the pod. But I wanted to hit on some of these risers that are very intriguing. First off, Shohei Ohtani, he was up 2.2 up to 97.8, and I did pull up his Statcast page right now, and his velo was almost up 2 miles an hour. Slider is up 3. All his velos were fine. Like, his velos were all up. He just got hit around. Like, he had a 30% CSW tonight. Like, not crazy. He just got hit around.
And bad timing, too, Jonah. I mean, it was a grand slam. That's true. Did a lot of the damage. Just Jonah Heim, of all people, went deep.
One pitch. And if you – I didn't realize who hit it at first, but somehow someone retweeted Jonah Heim's brother on Twitter, and it was something like, take that, how's that feel, or something like that. Like, it was pretty good.
There is something. I have seen stuff with, like, the Heim family. I thought his dad maybe.
His dad gets very active as well.
Yeah, that's right.
100%. Yeah.
It's nice to see them celebrate that way. That's good.
Yes, for sure. So Shohei looks fine. I think we're all kind of good on Shohei and rocking that one. But a few I want to ask you about, and I might as well pick this one up while we're talking, because Luis Severino, we know he's coming back from injury. He pitched a few innings last year to kind of get ready for this year. Over spring training, he looked pretty good as he was ramping up. In his first start, he went from 95.4 in 2021 to 97.8. And in his start tonight against the Jays, his fastball was still up 1.3 miles an hour. He's at 96.1 for the season now. He was averaging 97.4 again. So Changeup was up, slider is up. So Severino is looking pretty good, Ryan. Are you kind of buying back in? Like, I'm still hesitant on his total workload for the season, but if you can still maybe get like 120 or so Severino innings, that could be interesting if this velo kind of stays going.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Like, and that concern about Severino's kind of year-long workload, that's not going to go away no matter how great he pitches on a game-to-game basis. But yeah, like, impressive as heck, especially tonight to do that against Toronto. And to strike out Vlad Jr., we were talking before the show how Vlad can go 4-for-4 on Wednesday night with three bombs and then get the golden sombrero on Thursday night. Severino got him three times. And it's not with Severino, and I mentioned this with Wheeler, but like, it's not just the fastball velocity, but which is good, but he had six whiffs on 25 changeup. So he's getting that separation between the fastball and the changeup, and hitters are biting on that. And then five whiffs on a cutter as well. So 15 whiffs on 83 pitches against Toronto is about as good as you can get. So, yeah, really impressive stuff from Luis Severino. Like, on a per game basis, it looks like he's the Severino of old, honestly. But that concern of, you know, what are we going to get when it's August, when it's September, that, you know, it'll be a nice problem for fantasy managers and the Yankees to have, because that means he'll be shoving by the second half of the season. But I can't see how he's going to kind of keep this workload all year long. But maybe if you're in a trade league, and this is probably a little obvious, but Severino's doing his thing through June, he would be like a prime all-star break trade candidate for me. Yep. Just because I don't know how far he's going to go.
So high. Yeah. Yep. There's some other names here. You have Mitch Keller, who is up 2.5 miles an hour in his first start. I believe he pitches Friday or Saturday this weekend, so we'll get a second look at Mitch. Like, it was a rocky overall appearance. We saw some good, we saw some bad, but the velo was still there, so that's kind of a positive in what we saw all spring. So I'm willing to kind of sit back and watch a little longer. What are you thinking on Mitch?
Yeah, same. You know, gave up one home run, had four strikeouts in four innings, nine whiffs and 70 pitches. But yeah, most importantly, like you said, the velocity was there. So waited out a little bit. Let's see what the next start holds for Mr. Keller.
The next guy we're going to talk about, Siler, McGill, Ty Goat, Ty God. I've heard baby how many goat, other ones. Baby Goat, Baby DeGrom. A couple questions we have, like Brock Nussmeister said, how did the Mets replace DeGrom with DeGrom? Matt Williams said, who would be the first pitcher drafted today, and why is it Tyler McGill? The velo looks great. The dude just looks amazing. He's fun to watch. He pitches great. Do you think he can do it all season? That's the fun part.
I mean, I think he can. He had, yeah, I think, 130. I mean, so to pivot from like Severino, who we just have no data points on the last couple of years, I mean, McGill did throw like 130 innings last season between the majors and the minors. So if that bumps up even just a little bit, he gets to 160, 170. Like, that's in today's game, that's, you know, 90th percentile of starting pitchers. That's really good. The question that I would like, and so, I mean, it's, yeah, obvious, everything that McGill's doing, from the increase in velocity, the changeup's nasty, like everything looks great. It's just fascinating to see like where he would go in drafts right now. Like, I was thinking about that today. Like, McGill in the main event was, his ADP was 229 going around Huascar Ulloa, Anthony Desclafani. How high do you think he would go right now after these two starts?
It's got to be like a top 100 pick, don't you think?
I think, yeah. I mean, I think,
like, I know that might sound silly, like, or too easy. I might be being lazy. Like, I don't think he's a top fit. Like, he's not like a first four rounder, but he's easily like round six-ish, maybe.
Would you go, so maybe main events, Jose Berríos was 71, Yu Darvish was 76.
That's a good range. I think that's like a fair range for now.
Would you take McGill over those two guys right now? It's a tough question.
Probably, but that's the whole bad thing. Like, don't buy into the hype so much, but he's looked that good too. Where it's one of those, like, and we had this hope for him when he came up last year, because we saw it in the minors, but he kind of had that learning curve where the consistency in the zone, he gave up too many home runs. But now he's like, he does look like DeGrom, the way he's got the fastball moving and the slide piece, like, just it's nasty. It's really, really good stuff. So yeah, that's a great one. I think the Berríos combo is pretty interesting, especially because of how Berríos, he pitched better in his second start. Don't get me wrong.
He did, yep.
But that's an interesting one. That's a really good one. I think that's a fair range for now. Like, if he throws one more good start, now you're jumping him up another couple of rounds. What'll be fun is if he kind of keeps doing this, he'll have a couple of hiccups or whatever, but pitches overall really well for those like May or the was it late, not Labor Day, Memorial Day redrafts or whatever.
Yeah, yep.
That'll be fun. Yep. That'll be fun to see where he goes.
Yes, he would be, yeah, if he keeps this going, that ADP, I could see him being, I mean, at that point in the season, if he's still doing, he's not going to do this for very long, but if he's still an ace, he's probably going to go like second, third round in those leagues. Yep. I wouldn't be surprised at all, but we're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves. If you drafted McGill, pat yourself on the back, do your little victory lap, because it came late and you're already getting some really good returns on it. And like I said, like, it looks like this is gonna hold for quite a bit. So enjoy the find.
I think my only two shares from our last two OCs, the Saturday night before the season and the Wednesday night before the season, I got them both like in around like nice. 22 or 23. And I'm like, all right, let's dance. But I wish I had more. Let's put it that way. A couple more here, like Jesus Luzardo. We saw how filthy he was between the fastball increasing the 97.6, the curveball usage, and just swinging strike on the curveball was awesome. And then you got Eric Lauer with the increase velo. He kind of got hit around a little bit, but the velo increase was good to see. Urquidy, any thoughts on these starters that we're seeing right now?
I think Lizardo is the one who's getting all the pub. I know like Eric Cross was really big on Jesus Luzardo entering the season. When Eric says that kind of stuff, I listen for sure. That the interesting thing with Luzardo is. Like you said, the curveball usage, 50% curveballs in his first start. So yeah, he did have the fastball bump, but he only threw 24 fastballs. He only the 31% of his pitches. So it'll be interesting to see. I think this is just as much of a pitch mix thing as it is four seam. And again, since it's just one start, maybe Miami saw in that first game, like, you need to throw curveballs against that team. And maybe that was just the approach that game. And then his next start, he'll go back to the four seam a little bit more and we'll see what happens. I don't think he can throw 50% curveballs all season. I think the league's going to adapt to that, but really interesting. And obviously with Luzardo, you've got the pedigree, right? Like this time last year, he was a top 80 pick in main events. I mean, he fell flat on his face, but there was a reason for that. So
yeah, I was proud of my McGill shares. I have zero Luzardo, so that one stings. But the one thing I'm curious of, you mentioned the 52% curveball. That's one of those pitches. There's certain outings you're just not going to have a feel for it. So now how good's the fastball going to be? And that's when it's going to get fun with seeing this change. So I am very, very curious about that. And we don't have him on this list. We don't have to talk about him. But I'm curious to see the third start for Kyle Hendricks, because you're talking pitch mixes. Maybe it's a team philosophy. That first start, heavy, heavy changeup, pitched phenomenal. Second start, very little changeups, got shelled. So I'm really curious on how the third start for Hendricks goes. That's, again, it's not always – the reason I bring that up, because you brought it up with Luzardo, is it's not always about the fastball. Like, this is a great indicator on something that's probably a plus, but sometimes it's the overall pitch mix and how they're using it to make it really work. So many of the tools we can use to kind of analyze things as well.
Yeah, exactly. You've got to have the other tools. And then I mentioned that with like Severino, I was just as impressed with the changeup, because that obviously tunnels and plays off the fastball. And if you've got that separation between the two, it makes their other pitches that much better. So
a couple other faders, and then we'll go to some of these hitters we're talking about here. But Chris Paddock was down almost 3 miles an hour. I wasn't really optimistic on Paddock. Again, cold weather, first start in a while. We'll see. You got Barlow out of the bullpen, which is kind of interesting for Kansas City, dropping over 2 miles an hour. And then Shane Bieber, I guess the one we really need to at least hit on. 92.8 last season, 90.8 this season. He had a great, like, I had a no-no going for a while against Cincinnati his last time out. Then it unraveled, got hit around the first time out. How concerned are you with Shane Bieber?
I'm concerned that he's not going to return anywhere near second round value. I think Shane Bieber, which is where Bieber was being drafted, I think Shane Bieber can get by with diminished fastball velocity. I kind of mentioned that earlier. So I think from an actual like per game standpoint, I think he can be like a solid SP2. It's not what you drafted him for, but that's okay. It's not a disaster. The thing where I really get worried about Bieber is not just the fastball velocity drop, but that velocity drop on top of missing 100 days last year on the IL with a shoulder. Yeah. Like that lead, if he didn't have the shoulder thing and he's just getting older and the velocity's down, like I'm okay with that kind of like Zach Greinke path to being sufficient. But then you throw the shoulder injury on top of that and all the missed time last season. I'm concerned that he's, you know, something's still not right there. We'll see. Cold weather and that sort of thing has played a factor in Bieber's two starts, but that is something that worries me. Even if Bieber can get by with some pretty sick secondary pitches, I just wonder if that drop in velocity just means it, you know, something's wrong with the shoulder still.
Yeah, what I'm expecting from Bieber this year is a 2021 Luis Castillo type season. That's, I think there's a lot of similarities, like the end of season numbers, maybe not as rough out the gate, but I think, like you said, he can figure it out and be like successful at this, but just not the ace he drafted. And by the end of draft season last year, Castillo was a 2-3 guy. So Bieber's going probably a little earlier, but I could see a lot of similarities.
And I bet you Luis Castillo is watching all these snow games in the middle of the season, just laughing. Because
with the heater on,
exactly. Just waiting until May when the sun comes out and he can dominate.
He's in Florida throwing bullpens and rehab, going, this is good.
He picked a good year to miss April. We'll just say that.
Beautiful thing, but we'll keep monitoring the fastball velocities and all that fun stuff, because what else are we going to do on Twitter, everybody? So that'll be to be good to see where things continue to go as the season goes on. Let's talk about some hitters with some hot starts, slow starts. There's tons of them. Like, I've written a, you know, buy high, sell low stuff, our stock rising and falling articles. Everyone's writing stuff throughout this early part of the season. We probably will for the next few weeks. That's just the way it's going to go. But you got a couple on here. I got one that really stands out to me, but we'll hit your first one here, because I think your second one's actually a part of a listener question. But Julio Rodriguez is one that you are, I guess, concerned with for his slow start, or maybe you're not. So what's your thoughts there?
Yeah, it's just the helium that Julio had with that just crazy spring, and he went in the early fourth round of my main. 52% strikeout rate through 19 plate appearances. Like, that's Bellinger-esque in terms of spring training. I know there has been some stuff out there on Twitter that I've seen where Julio has kind of gotten screwed a couple of times on called strikes. One happened today on a pitch that was probably a ball. And got rung up anyway. So there is some of that going on, and that stuff does matter in like a 19 plate appearance sample. But still, to be striking out more than 50% of the time on a team, on a Seattle team that I think thinks they can contend this year, we could see kind of like a Kelnick type of path that we saw last year, and have him go back down if this sticks. I mean,
to be fair, Kelenic's on a Kelenic type path again right now.
I know he did homer and get a steal today, but yeah, it's almost as bad for his brethren in Kelenic. I mean, the one good thing I'll say with Julio is he is running, and man, he can fly. Had an infield single today, like when he did make contact, and then he stole his second base today as well. So he is running when he does get on, and that is a good thing in terms of if this is just a slump and he's not totally overmatched in the majors and that sort of thing, the bags will be there. But it's getting time where we need to see a little bit more bat on ball from Julio Rodriguez, starting to get concerned about him and what we've seen so far.
Yeah, I'm with you on Julio. My guy's Joe Adell. I have a lot of Joe Adell. I was very optimistic on Joe Adell. And it started out pretty rough. He had a nice game a couple games ago, 2-for-4 with a home run and a double. Didn't start tonight, but guy came in 1-for-2 with a double. Probably starts on Friday night against the lefty Allard. But I guess the big concern I have is he's platooning. That's less than ideal. That's not what we were planning for there. And he's looked kind of lost at the plate, at least early on. Like, his last couple games have looked a lot better. He's kind of looking better, but the breaking balls are crushing him. And it's documented. It's in every beat reporter article you read right now. So obviously the teams know this, and it's literally going to be one of those things. You hear all the guys say it when a young kid, it's okay. Can you hit the fastball? Okay. You can hit the fastball. Well, now try to hit this. And they say on Bull Durham, so what's the show like? Well, you see pitchers with ungodly breaking balls. There's much more to that speech, but we're going to leave it at that. And that's what Adell's dealing with right now, ungodly breaking balls. And he's trying to figure it out. So hopefully he figures it out, because the talent's legit, but Joe Maddon's already kind of shown he's willing to platoon him, which means your next step's AAA.
And that's the thing. Yeah. Like that's, I mean, and just as a general takeaway, not just Adele, but like once it starts costing you playing time, that's when I get nervous. I mean, Adele has done himself no favors in left field either.
Defense has been rough. 100%. Yeah,
it's been bad. So he's already kind of on the semi outs in terms of playing time. And yeah, that's when I start to get worried.
He's one I was really nervous about. Like literally, this is how kind of, I guess some people might say fun, but sad our lives can be. Like I was, you know, picking up dog poop this afternoon and I was just thinking about my fantasy teams and I'm legit thinking like, do I drop Adele this week in 12 team leagues? Like if he's only going to play like 2 or 3 days a week, do I drop Adele? Like is it, but he's the same guy I know that if he figures it out, he's going to make me pay for it for like 3 months, but that's a lot of time that it might cost me too. So those are the moves that are really tricky. And I've said it time and time again in the off season stuff. One of my biggest kryptonites is knowing exactly when to drop someone. And you're going to get a lot of them wrong, but yeah, it'll be a fun dilemma Saturday night when I'm doing a lot of my fab inputs to see where Joe Adele goes on my teams.
I mean, it's funny you mentioned the drops because that is what people are, those are the decisions that listeners are faced with. And you can get absolutely burned by your drops. I mean, we just talked about Robbie Ray. Robbie Ray wasn't that great his first two starts last season, and he went on and won the Cy Young. Another example is, I mean, no one's dropping Freddie Freeman. You'd be crazy to do that. But Freddie Freeman hit 300 last year, 31 bombs, 83 ribbies, 120 runs scored. Do you know what he hit through May last season?
Oh, it was brutal. Below 200. No, it was low 200s. It was really bad.
Yeah, it was like 233. Through the first two months of the season.
He was a great X stats guy, though. He was one of those you could look at going, okay, it's coming. Now, again, I get yelled at a lot because it's like, well, some of those X stats are garbage, blah, blah, blah. Like, well, they also can point, like, paint a pretty picture, too. Like, let's not be foolish about it. It's like, you can use these tools, just don't make them the only tool type thing. But yeah, Freeman's a great example. Like, Joey Votto just struck out. He's now hitting like $150 to start the season. You're not dropping Joey Votto. Hate to break it to you. But there's a lot of panic out there. And I got a few questions here from Eric Samolsky, but I've had a ton of DMs this week and just guys in general running to panic. And I'm like, you drafted this guy. Let him play a little bit. Like, let's chill. Like, you drafted him for a reason. He wasn't your 29th round pick. This was a dude you drafted with the intentions of starting on your team. It's like slumps happen. If this was June, no one would care. No one. So got to think about that.
Mookie Betts is hitting 217 without a homer or steal. He was my first round pick in the main. I'm not worried at all. Like my outlook on Mookie Betts, I'm just calling random guys out here at this point, but my outlook on Mookie Betts has not changed at all. If Mookie Betts went 217 on a random week in mid-August, no one would even know about it. I totally agree, Bubba, especially for like your guys who you drafted in probably the first 15, 20 rounds of your team and playing time is not an issue. Just let them ride. Do not panic on the hitters, especially for these guys. I mean, it's baseball is a game of variance, is a game of slumps. Some guys are going to slump early. Some guys are going to slump late. We notice the early guys. We don't notice the late guys. That's just human nature right now. So be patient, people.
No doubt about it. I mentioned Eric Samolsky with a couple of the guys. He wanted to know about the panic meter on them. And we kind of hit on him earlier, Akil Badu. You had him listed here, so that's why I want to bring it up with Eric's question. How much are you panicking on this, though? Because, like, we have a chance to maybe see him play more. Again, Robbie Grossman could be back by the time people listen to this show. We'll see. But what's your panic meter on Badu?
With Badu, the only thing is, like I said, playing time and lineup. One of the big draws with Badu was wasn't, like, a huge power or a huge speed guy, but he had enough power and speed with the plate appearances and racking that up, hitting leadoff, that it would act over a full season. It would do its thing. So I am definitely nervous that he's not hitting higher in the order and that he's not hitting higher in the order even after injuries. So definitely worried. The issues against lefties worries me as well. Just again, not in terms of performance, but in terms of playing time. So I did list him as someone who, again, you're not dropping or anything at this point, but my panic meter is I don't know how high the panic meter goes. We'll say 5, 0 to 5. I'm at a 4.
Yeah. Before the Grossman injury, when he was consistently batting like 8th, I was telling people, like, if you want to add, I was debating Stephen Kwan at one point, like certain guys where I know they're going to hit higher in the order and get at bats. I'm like, if you're not like desperate for a 12 home run, 15 home run bat, and what Bedu can do, like, yeah, go give it a whirl and see what happens. Because Bedu was platooning, Bedu was hitting the bottom of the order. Like, there were some serious concerns. We'll see where this goes. But it, again, it's batting position, like you said, regular playing time. He's losing out on both. So that's quite the concern. Trent Grisham, talk about slow starts. Trent Grisham off to a very rough start in San Diego. But then again, you know, people think a couple years ago how great he was, and he was still very good last year, just didn't light the world on fire. He still hit 242 last year with 15 homers and 13 steals. So, like, it was that's a Trent Grisham season, hitting .136 so far. Any concerns with Trent?
I did not realize it was that bad. Have an RBI. Has one run scored.
One run scored. Yeah, nothing.
Still going to play. I'm not worried, but that is really bad. I obviously don't have Grisham anywhere else. I would probably know this. I did not realize it was that rough. But, same exact thing like I just said. If his spot in the lineup is fine and his playing time is fine, do not freak out about 1 week, even though it is a brutal week. Strikeout rate is a little bit up, but nothing too crazy. It's more like a 200 BABIP that is doing him in. So that'll correct. If you believed in Grisham 2 weeks ago when you drafted him, you should believe in him now.
And then the last one here is Marcus Semien. He's now, after tonight's game, 3-for-27 on the season with a double and 3 runs scored. I'm not concerned. I wasn't expecting the MVP candidate Marcus Semien in Texas, but you're going to get a much better Marcus Semien than this, I'd be willing to say.
You're going to get a lot better Marcus Semien than this. So again, I'm looking at Marcus Semien last season. Marcus Semien, the week of April 11th, 2021. This is just a data point to reinforce what I'm saying here. Even in Marcus Semien's godlike season where he hit 45 homers, the week of April 11th, 2021, Marcus Semien hit .174 with 1 run scored, 2 RBIs over 23 at-bats. Those weeks happen even in fantastic seasons. He hit .172 in a week in June. He hit .174 right after the week after the All-Star break. He hit .160 the week of September 12th. He hit .115 the last full week of the season. So again, I just picked out 5 weeks where Marcus Semien in his career year hit under .200 with not much counting stats. So hold strong, be patient.
Yeah. Last question we have here, and I don't know how much you want to answer this being in your main event league and all, but Jay Mitz asks, out of all the relievers that have next to no ownership right now, who would be your favorite to land above 20 saves by the season's end?
Jay Mitz, I'm trying to look up where what place he's in. My main team, I'm in six. He's in first place. He's top 50 overall in the main. So Jeff, I don't know if I should be answering this, but I will. I'm an open book. That's part of the job, right?
As
a fantasy analyst. You say you love Nate Eovaldi and you go get him in your draft. this is kind of like a blast from the past, but the velocity's back. This guy's been a elite closer in the past. He's one injury away from being the closer, already has a save, and that's Brad Hand on the Philadelphia Phillies. The velocity's, again, just two appearances, but when Hand was hurt in 2020, or not hurt, but when his velocity was down in 2020, maybe he was hurt, the velocity was at 91.4, and that's back up to 93. So far in two appearances. He is behind Corey Knebel, who has injury problems of himself. So he's only one injury away from being a closer on a good team and someone who, despite the recent injury issues, has been a really good closer in the past. So I'll go Brad Hand as someone who could easily get 20 saves by the end of the season and no one is really thinking about right now.
I'll give two spec ones. That's all these are. Class A's looked rough early on. The velo's been a mess. Mm-hmm. So if something's wrong with him, Brian Shaw could be interesting. I have a lot of Nick Sandlin and DCs as like late picks, but I think Shaw would get the first option there. But the other one I was looking at because we were watching that game before we started recording, Chapman's looked off most of the season already. And I'm not saying like be super concerned. I love Lois, Jonathan Loisiga. I think he's almost viable. He's like a Jonathan or a Paul Sewell type anyways. Like he's got his viability, but Chad Green would be the one I could say taking a peek at, because you could see him slotting in there in the ninth and sneaking away with 20 saves on a Yankees team that should win a handful of ball games. Like these are all completely spike. I love the hand call because we've already seen it once. We've seen it in the past. So that makes a ton of sense. But other than that, like you could say the same thing about Devin Williams if you really wanted to, but sure. He's probably actually rostered in a lot of leagues.
Yeah, he's.
But I think Chad Green would be one I would be willing to take a chance with if you really want to get crazy, Mets. If you really want to get crazy. One last thing, in case unless you have anything else before this, but I did want to mention, we know Walker Buehler's velocity was kind of a concern in his first start. It wasn't like super super down, but it was down. Well, he was down a bit again tonight. Not a ton, like 0.6 miles an hour on the fastball, 2.5 miles an hour on the slider. That was a big drop. But again, something to monitor with Buehler. He got the job done, but it wasn't great. He gave up a 2-run homer to Aristis Aquino before he left the game.
That's right. The Punisher took him deep. And I think that he got out of a bases loaded jam early in the outing as well. Buehler was very polarizing. There were some very smart people who do not think Walker Buehler was even worthy of like a top 15 starting pitcher. I don't want to put words in. Derek Carty was one who I went back and forth with him on Buehler, and but someone who's very, very smart and very down on Walker Buehler. Buehler is someone who has always kind of outpitched his peripherals. Really does rely on that fastball though. And so if that velocity is down, I'm going to be kind of worried as well. So something to track for sure. Obviously with Walker Buehler, you're not worrying too much just because of the long leash and how good he's been, but that is noteworthy for sure.
Yeah. Just the biggest thing with him, which gets me, is when you're taking a pitcher that early, he's not getting the strikeouts. He had 4 Ks. Yes. That's kind of why I stayed away. If the velo is down, the strikeouts aren't there, he's got to pitch to be successful. So, yeah, just keep an eye on that, people, and see. If anything, I like targeting him in DFS right now. I'm just going to throw that out there. One of these days, a blow-up's coming if the velocity stays down. But final thoughts, Ryan, as this is episode 4, wrapping up here, our second week of real baseball action. Any final thoughts for the listeners?
Not much. Enjoy the game. Stay patient on the hitter side. Be aggressive on the pitcher side. And kind of, I know we talked about like, you know, specific players, but hopefully you got kind of the takeaways on some of our like our theories and what we're looking at velocity, but then also taking that extra step and looking at why something is happening. If you can spend the time and kind of learn what's going on that way, I think you're going to get a step ahead. It does take a little bit of work, but that's what we're trying to preach here. So.
Yeah, if my brain can figure out how to find things on Savant to the level I can, which is not even close to the full extent of the website, then you all can do it too. Like, I'm not expecting you to make bloom boards. That's way out of my pay grade. But you can figure a lot of things out, trust me. Or just, you know, subscribe to Baseball HQ and some other places. Like, you'll find all the good stuff there as well. But we'll wrap it up there. You can find Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ. I'm on Twitter at BDentric. This was Bubba and the Bloom, episode 4. We'll be back with you guys next week. Have a good one.
Life's better with an auto policy from American Family Insurance. No matter what dreams you're driving towards. That's because our expert agents will make you feel totally protected with the right auto coverage at the right price. You'll also save up to 23% when you bundle auto with home. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.